envision three female attorneys coming together to have our voices heard. Each of us would have different opinions, different passions, different backgrounds, and different views. Although we are different and unique, we are able to come together to discuss our experiences navigating through the legal profession and this thing called life. Now, the vision has come alive, and we invite you each and every week to listen to us as we talk about what's trending in the news and our legal insight. Tackle real life issues that affect not only us as attorneys, but us as women of color. Disclaimer: this podcast is intended to provide entertainment and general information. The information provided and the views given are not intended to constitute legal advice and should not be relied upon as legal representation. All views expressed on this podcast are our own and do not represent the opinions of any entity whatsoever we are affiliated with now or will be affiliated with in the future. Hey guys, it's your girl Brandy, and we are back with your favorite attorneys in H-Town. Hope everybody's having a good week. Hope everybody's doing good. As always, I want your favorite attorneys to introduce themselves. Let's start with Miss Sam.
Hey everyone, I hope everyone is having a great week, COVID-free, and is not at Prospect Park eating up wings and hookah. Stay inside, guys.
And crawfish. You know, it's crawfish season. Taria? T. Hutch?
Hey guys, it's Taria. I'm still doing my own hair, but this should be the last time. I have an appointment in about 2 weeks. Praise the Lord. I hope everybody's doing well.
But you're looking fabulous, darling.
Thanks, doll. Thanks. Sam, Next up is Cosmo, license. Yeah, that's nice.
Y'all looking fabulous. Well, we are talking about sensitive topic. You know, we're just going to go right. Everybody has heard the news. Everybody knows what's going on. Apparently, since COVID-19 is, you know, apparently lighting up a little bit, they start back killing us. We getting shot. We getting killed again. So we're going to talk about it. Before we get started and delve into the topic, we are bringing in our two guests on our show. One is a friend of the show. We've had him on before, and our viewers love him. He is one of our favorite criminal defense attorneys in the city of Houston. So I just want him to reintroduce himself again. So, Mr. Brooker, introduce yourself. Tell them who you are. Thank you for coming back on our show.
Thank you for having me, Brandy. And ladies, I appreciate you allowing me to come back and hang out for a minute. My name is Quinnen Brooker. I am an attorney and counselor at law, practicing mostly in Houston, but all around Texas, the majority of my cases being one of criminal defense. And I am very excited to be on this show and discuss these issues and these matters with you today.
And so our next guest, he's going to be a friend of our show. He just don't know it yet. But he is a good friend of ours. We have a lot of history. And Andre went to school together, law school together. And he is out of Georgia. So we're talking about the Ahmaud Arbery matter, the situation that occurred in Georgia. We brought Andre and us all. So Andre, introduce yourself to our audience so everybody knows who you are.
All right. First of all, ladies, thank y'all for having me this evening. I really appreciate it. My name is Andre Smith. I'm a criminal defense attorney here in Atlanta. Most of my cases are in the metro Atlanta area, but like Quinnen does in Texas, I practice all over the state of Georgia.
That's what's
up. I'm very excited to be on here.
Yeah, I'm a little nervous about y'all on here, but it's going to be great. It's going to be great. But before we get started, so basically what we're going to talk about today is it's a broad topic, and we're also going to narrow it down. So one, I want to start out with, we're tired of Black people getting killed. We're tired of seeing our young brothers, our young sisters being killed for senseless murders. And this time, it's not no Black-on-Black crime. We're not doing it. We're not killing us. The cops are killing us. There are white people who just wake up one day and start killing us and then find justification on why they're killing us. So we are tired, and this is the purpose of this podcast. So I want to just run this down real quick. I saw this post on Facebook that I want to read. I know pretty much of y'all have seen it as well. So it says, "We can't go jogging, Ahmaud Arbery. We can't relax in the comfort of our homes, Botham Sean and Atenia Jefferson. We can't ask for help after being in a car crash, Jonathan Farrell and Renisha McBride. We can't have a cell phone, Stephon Clark. We can't leave a party to get safety, Jordan Edwards. We can't play loud music, Jordan Davis. We can't sell CDs, Alton Sterling. We can't even sleep in our own homes, Ayanna Jones. We can't walk from the corner store, Mike Brown. We can't play cops and robbers, Tamir Rice. We can't even go to church and worship, Charleston Nine. We can't walk home with Skittles in our pocket, Trayvon Martin. We can't hold a hairbrush while leaving our bachelorette party or bachelor party, Sean Bell. We can't party on New Year's Eve, New Year's Day, Oscar Grant. We can't get a normal traffic ticket, Sandra Bland. We can't lawfully carry a weapon, Philando Castillo. We can't break down on a public road with car problems, Corey Jones. We can't even stop at Walmart, John Crawford. We can't have a disabled vehicle, Terrence Crutcher. We can't read a book in our own car, Keith Scott. We can't be a 10-year-old walking with our grandmother, Clifford Glover. We can't decorate a party, and I love to decorate and have parties, Claude Reese. We can't ask a cop a question, Randy Evans. We can't cash our check in peace, Yvonne Smallwood. We can't take out our wallet, Amando Diallo. We can't run, again, we can't run, we can't jog, Walter Scott. We can't even breathe, Eric Garner. We can't live, period, Freddie Gray. So we tired, we're over it. We about to make noise, we about to get loud. And we're trying to convince everybody that Black Lives Matter, because honestly, Black lives do matter. And I want to see our Black, our young boys and our young women to grow. These people that just got killed recently, Ahmaud Arbery, the young lady that got killed in Louisville, Kentucky, frontline worker, she didn't die from COVID. She died because the police officer came knocking through her door and shot her 20 times. We can't do nothing. We can't even sleep in our own house. But I digress. I'm a little excited. I'm a little passionate. I'm a little angry. So let me step back, because I am mad and I'm angry. And that is the purpose.
I want to add to that, because let's not forget we can't whistle with Emmett Till. Because that is...
That's where it went far back.
Yeah, that's where it all... Not where it all began, but I think that was one of the nation's first cases of where you can't just live life and justice not be served. Yeah.
So yeah, we can't whistle. You can't whistle. He couldn't whistle. And then the lady lied. Came back and lied. That 16-year-old boy didn't even have a chance because she lied.
Correct.
Can I add something? We say we're tired, but we should feel how Brandy feels, which is angry. We should be livid. We should be beside ourselves. That very long list that she read is but a fraction of documented lynchings that have occurred in our country, in our history. There's an interesting book written by a man named Ginsberg, a white Jew, and that book is called 100 Years of Lynching. I believe it was published back in the 70s. And it chronicled all of the lynchings that occurred in all 50 states during that 100-year period that he memorialized. To understand that that's just in our lifetime, those names. Those are people that we can relate to. Those are people that are our age, people that could be our cousin, our husband, our wives, our girlfriends, our niece, our sister, our mothers. So we should be enraged at this point. And us as attorneys, I think that we have the obligation to do more in terms of leadership. I don't know if we're always on the same page doing that, but nevertheless, we have to come together and get away from the talking. We know the history, we know what's happening, and we understand that there's an open warfare against us right now. That being stated, it is now about actions. And what are we going to do as leaders in Black society to ensure that our men, women, and children are safe in these streets? That's what it's about. At this point, what are we doing?
I would agree with you, Quentin. What I was going to say is that I'm actually tired of hearing people say that they're angry, because angry is just an emotion. Right. And I actually am tired of the Twitter activists and the social media activism and nobody doing anything else. So not saying that it's, I do think that it's a great avenue to bring light and shed light. But after the marches end, after things, everyone goes home, what are we doing to force our legislature, to force the people that are in charge to change and to enforce or change the laws to ask and demand for protection? Like, it's great that we're angry, but we're angry and then we go home and then we tweet about it or we post about it, and then what do we do?
Nothing. We need to vote. I mean, a lot of that change comes with voting, and that's what the problem is. We can march up and down City Hall. We can march up and we can go catch a plane and go to Georgia. We can get the Black Panthers to come in with their guns and, you know, whatever. We can do that all day long. But like you said, after it's all said and done, you go home. Where are you on election day in November? Where are you?
Have people who are saying that they want to vote for President Trump because they got a stimulus check. Like, $1,200 can buy your vote.
And ladies,
so how angry are you?
I have to respectfully disagree about the voting. And I have to respectfully disagree about us asking the legislature to make laws. We've had laws. We've had laws for over 100 years that were supposed to take care of us. But those laws are never enforced in our favor. There's laws that were created that were supposed to lift us up out of one economic situation and put us in another, but then there are other people benefiting from those laws. We have these laws. That's not going to do it. We need to now start taking some responsibility ourselves and doing some things ourselves. And voting for the next president, I hate to say, it's not going to happen. We've had 45 presidents. It doesn't matter. We had a Black president. It didn't matter. We still had Mike Brown. We still had Trayvon Martin. We still had these things happen. And what changed? We now have another president and we're still having the same thing. So it's about time that we understand that we live in a system of white supremacy, period. And the law is a part of that system. So we all became lawyers so that presumably we can do something to make it better, right? To make a difference, to help people. But guess what? It may be time that we need to install our own system. We need to figure that out, because this system, obviously for the 400 and some odd years that we've been here, has not worked to our benefit. And it still hasn't. And if we continue to think that we will do things the same way and we're somehow going to get a different result, then we are literally practicing the definition of insanity. We've seen this in our lifetime. We're not talking about the 60s. We're not talking about the 50s. We're not talking about 1921 Tulsa. We're talking about 2020. And three white men can get in a vehicle, track down a Black man and lynch him in broad daylight. And it's okay for several months. Nobody says anything until a video is disclosed. So if we think that we're going to somehow vote our way out of this, I think we're barking up the wrong tree, respectfully. If we think we're somehow going to legislate our way out of this, I totally disagree with that. We need to figure something out. It may require us to go back and get the Black Panthers. It may require us to arm every Black man, woman, and child so that they can protect themselves with ever in this situation. But it has to be something different than what's already set up. This system was not set up for us, and it clearly is not working for us.
I disagree. I think that if you start bringing back the Black Panthers, okay, great. They're just gonna get shot, arrested, going to prison, mow people down the road. I think that we have had rules, and I do agree with your position that they have not worked. But I think part of it is because we aren't active participants in the process. Like, going down to vote is not the only step. Run for some things. Run for city council, have people go out, because everyone knows that when election time comes, who are they looking for? The Black female vote.
Correct.
Everybody's fighting for it. Everybody's Correct. Fighting for it. And so imagine if some of these people, while you're protesting, were actually running and putting themselves in positions to enforce some of these laws. Like, it doesn't just start with the president election, but imagine like the judge that's hearing this case is a Black judge or a Black prosecutor, I'm sorry. imagine if you had more people in position of actual power that could make the decisions. The problem is that we do not have enough people of color, and I'm not just talking about African-American people, but I'm saying people of color that are in positions of power to make decisions. Do I think that we live in a nation of white supremacy? No, I do not. I think that there are both sides. That's an issue. No. Okay. Well, I'm just going to say that's my opinion. I don't think that we live in a nation of white supremacy. Oh. Do I think that under the current administration, is there a certain agenda being pushed? Yes. I have my own reasoning as why. But I think it's about the almighty dollar at the end of the day. I think that we don't live in white supremacy. I think that we live in a world ruled by money, in a nation ruled by money.
Okay, so let's pause right there. Let's get into the actual cases, because I know Andre itching to talk. So it's Rhea. So we have a clip with the Ahmaud Arbery, the murder that was lynching, with the lynching and murder that occurred. So we want to go ahead and play that for our viewers and listeners so they can go ahead and play that as well. Okay, so I want to pose this question to Andre, because this did happen in Georgia, and you do practice heavily in Georgia. You practice the Georgia law in Atlanta. Shout out to AFAM, Atlanta. Hi, Atlanta. But I want to know that, for one, what is the citizen's arrest? Like, what is in Georgia? And is that a thing? What is?
Well, for can y'all hear me?
Yeah.
Okay, first and foremost, this is something that you don't see every day. People just walking outside saying, I'm going to arrest somebody. I mean, people aren't walking around with handcuffs. The only handcuffs I know people have is that's for other reasons, not for arresting people taking to jail. But you don't see this on an everyday basis. You don't see people walking out saying, I'm just going to, go tackle somebody, shoot somebody because it's his arrest. What a citizen arrest essentially allows you to do is, me, myself, I don't have arresting powers like a police officer. So it allows a regular citizen to have temporary police powers under certain criteria. The criteria that the statute says that basically you don't have to be right. You just got to be reasonable in what you're doing. And certainly, or have immediate knowledge or some sort of knowledge right there at the time you made the citizen's arrest. So I guess the argument is right now with this case down in South Georgia is that him going onto the construction site, going in, walking around, whatever he did, is to them interpreted as, because on the 911 call, I believe he said that you think he's burglarizing and things like that. They're interpreting that as he was committing a crime. So they felt like he was committing a crime. They were trying to address him and say, look, we need to talk to you, see what you stole, what's taken away, whatever like that. Of course, we seen the video and saw that he was, like QB said earlier, he was lynched when they shot him. But essentially, a citizen's arrest allows a regular citizen that does not have police powers that have been ordained by some higher power here in Georgia to arrest you if they believe you were in the commission of committing a felony. Now, I can tell you right now, going into a home that is being built, that's a construction site, is not a crime. Maybe trespass city ordinance at best, but it's not a felony. It has to be a felony for it to be a citizen's arrest. And of course, I don't think that was the case here. And I think that argument is going to be debunked, especially when we hear from the homeowner whose house getting built that he don't believe that nothing was being stolen anyway, because he didn't call the police, nor did he think he was committing a crime. So
to piggyback on that too, because I did see the video with the construction, when he did go into the home that was being under construction, And it's funny because I'm actually in the process of building a house. And I went to my home to see it being built or whatever, like 2 days ago. And a couple, when I was driving off and I looked at they're walking in my home. They waited till I leave and they walked in my home. They walked in there, everything. I watched them, drove them around, and walked out and said, why are you in my home? It's mine. I'm putting my earnest money down. I'm about to go. Why are you in my house? And what they told me was, oh, the builder said, we'll come look at your house, you know, as a model home. So that is common amongst people who are looking for homes or when you're out. I know for if you're looking for a home or you just want to, you know, you go walk into a model home or look at a house being built just because you're like, oh, I like this structure. I might be interested in it. So I felt like that kind of resonated and like kind of set home for me because I'm like, this kind of happened. I mean, they weren't that, but same situation. They walked into
and,
my
home. But I think, Brandy, with this situation, there's more context to it because when we initially found out about the story, we heard of, we thought there were multiple burglaries that have been reported over the last few weeks or months or whatever like that. Of course, what we found out, that was one burglary that was reported, I believe, on January 1st. And the person that was described in that, if I'm not mistaken, was not, you know, the description that Aubrey was. Certainly, I think a gun was stolen from a truck outside of the McMichael's home, if I'm not mistaken. But that was, you know, 6 weeks before he was killed. So the whole notion of, you know, all these burglaries had happened or was occurring, I think that's going out the window. So the reason why I bring that up is because when it goes to him going in the house or going around the house or whatever it might be, you know, my first thought was, okay, well, if there had been burglaries and if he had been somebody that had been described and fit that description, then maybe, you know, there may be a defense that you can line up with the McMichaels insofar to say, is their belief being reasonable? But because that didn't occur, and because I think now there's a recent article saying that they had just prior to that incident, they had some sort of contact with each other. I don't know what kind of contact it was. I do know there was some contact within the DA's office that I think Aubrey had been in a slight trouble, nothing crazy, I don't think. But I think all that, when you bring it to it as a whole, coming to when he was at that construction site, I think, you know, the law is, and a jury is going to have to look at, you know, what was in the mind frame of the McMichaels, and a jury is going to put themselves in their shoes and say, would I have made the same call that they made based on the citizen's arrest law that we all know? The second DA who took the case put out a memo and said that based on the citizen's arrest, we thought that this case was basically a open, shut, and closed self-defense case. No charges should be brought. But also, we know there was little to no investigation done by the second DA. And of course, I know we're going to talk about it, but those scream of some professional responsibility issues that he's going to have to address here in the next few weeks.
So then let me piggyback on when you said self-defense. So what is Georgia's self-defense law? Because they did try to use self-defense, and to me, that didn't look like self-defense. So, like, what is the self-defense in Georgia?
Well, in Georgia, you don't have a duty to retreat. You know, you don't have a duty to run away. So, you know, there's been a question posed as to, you know, if somebody's pointing a gun at you, the normal reaction is to run away. Well, there's two reactions you can make. You can either defend yourself or you can run. And so there's no law against defending yourself against what, you know, Aubrey was facing. And of course, there's no law that says you have to run away, like you have to retreat. So he does not have to retreat. So basically, you know, self-defense in Georgia is kind of similar, you know, kind of Florida. Like, it's very similar in nature. And I hate to bring the case up, but, you know, how George Zimmerman used it in the Trayvon Martin case, and stand your ground law. I mean, in Georgia, you have a right to protect your property, whether it be your house, your car, or your person, but you can't pull out a gun in a fist fight. It's kind of one of those equal forces type of argument. But if you feel for your life that is in danger, if your life is in danger, and that is on a case-by-case basis, on a person-by-person basis, because when you're trying to figure out what somebody's mental state was, that's the hardest thing to do, in my opinion, in our legal field, is to figure out what was going through somebody's mind at the time that the action occurred. So if me and you get into it, of course, me pull out a gun and you slapping me, that's not gonna work in self-defense. But if you pull out a knife and you're about to kill me, or you pull out a knife and I feel for my life, I can pull out a gun and then shoot you. So what I've seen with juries here in Georgia is they more so look at it by, you know, who are the characters, how big, how small they are, you know, what was the circumstances surrounding everything. And of course, most people put themselves in the shoes, of course, of the defendant and said, would I have pulled the trigger? Would I have pulled the knife? Would I have used the bat? Would I have used whatever weapon or whatever course of action that the defendant took place to defend themselves? The jurors, of course, say, would I have done that? And, you know, 9 times out of 10, you better be right when you pull the gun. But I always tell people, you know, if you're in fear for your life, you know, the old axiom, you'd rather be judged by 12 than carried by 6, still holds true today. So at Georgia, it's a situation where if you're in a fight, that's one thing. But if the fight escalates to somebody pulling out a weapon, you can pretty much do what you want to do. If it's property, you can do what you want to do. Even if they run away from the property, they're in your yard, you can kill them. You can also protect your neighbor's property the same way. It's kind of like some similar to Texas, but that's Georgia for you.
Hey, I have a question for Quentin and for Andre, just with something that Andre said. So you said, we all know that the video was submitted way longer. Like, it's just coming to light, but it actually happened in February. Do you believe that part of this that played into it is that because he was an African-American person, that they kind of swept it under the rug because one, police officers didn't want to do the paperwork for it, and then they didn't think that his family would file anything or fight for it, or it would come back afterward? Do you think that played a part in that? In the decision to not do anything?
Hey, Quentin, let me answer that one real quick, and then I'll let you get it. First and foremost, I want you to understand the geography of the state of Georgia. When people hear Georgia, first city they think about is Atlanta. Atlanta is north central in Georgia. So that means that we're on the northern part of the state. When you go below Macon, which is central Georgia, all that is considered south Georgia. It is a totally different environment from Atlanta, from metro Atlanta area. It's very country, a lot of backwoods, one church, one grocery store, everybody knows each other. And of course, what a lot of people don't want to scream about the elephant in the room is the good old boy system. And you know, people say, well, what is the good old boy system? Well, good old boy system is the people down there protect each other, and they're not going to allow somebody who's in a good old boy network to go down under the rug or be swept in to the law if they can afford it. If you think back to the older days, you know, a lot of the judges, a lot of the DAs, even defense attorneys, they were all part of or affiliated with the KKK or some other white supremacy group. And these people were in higher power, looking over people like, of course, African-Americans, other minorities, as well as other whites. So when you talk about the good old boy network, these people are saving each other. Now, get to what you're saying. This is what I really think. I really think that you had an African-American man. You had two white guys, of course. I think the father worked for the first DA's office. She recused herself. It came to the second DA, I think the Waycross Judicial Circuit. And when you see him come out with a memo that says that screams, I am covering up, or I am sweeping under the rug, or I am saving this guy from any kind of ridicule that's going to come from this. And then they let their hands go. They did a quick memo, let their hands go and say, hey, we did our job, we're done with it. So I think what really happened is it was the protection of the good old boy system. It was only until the mother continued to scream out like, hey, you know, my son was killed. Of course, about 3 weeks ago, this case started getting traction. And then there was a white attorney who I was friends with the McMichaels, but did not represent them. That, in my opinion, is a part of the good old boy system because he's been practicing down there 39 years. He broke away from that thinking, okay, I'm going to release this video in hopes to try to help my friends. Let's not look at, oh, he released a video to help us. No, he released a video because he said, these are my friends and I'm trying to help them out. So he had every intention on saying, look, they were justified in what they were doing, but little did he know when he released the video, it unturned a stone that if he had not released it, we wouldn't be on this podcast talking about it because there would be no charges or nobody in jail right now absent the video.
And I appreciate that background about the geography, Dre. But these are the facts. This is what we know. We know that the murder occurred on February 23rd. The arrest occurred on May the 9th. There was little to no activity in terms of prosecution of this case prior to the video being released. We also know that we're on now the third prosecutor. The first prosecutor, I believe, is Glenn County. The DA is named Jackie Johnson. This Mr. McMichael worked for her. He was her investigator. Okay, so he was with the system. So is it a part of the good old boy system? Absolutely. But again, they're all white. I protest to you that if McMichael were black, this would be a different situation. He would have been arrested. In fact, the police department wanted to arrest both of them that day. They went to Jackie Johnson and she told them to stand down. This is why she recused herself. And this is why the second DA recused him or herself, because of the connection. And so when you look at, again, the victim, when you look at who was killed, it was a black male. There is a long, long history in our South and really all over the country, but specifically in Confederate states, of lynching. And there's a long history, not only of lynching, but of law enforcement not only being aware of many of these lynchings, but in many cases being complicit in these lynchings, participating in these lynchings. This is nothing new. You can open up a history book and it's the exact same story. The only difference is the date. So yes, race is not only a factor, it is the factor. It is the reason why this happened. And the only reason why we're hearing about it today is because that defense attorney misjudged his actions, thinking it was going to help his friends, and it turned around to hurt them. That's the only reason why we're even talking about this. Otherwise, there would be no prosecution in this case. They had no intention. They had no intention of filing murder charges against these two gentlemen. So yes, it's the good old boy system for certain, because he did work in that system, but race is the predominant factor. One thing about Jackie Johnson, she stays on code with what they do, no matter what. Whatever the rules are, again, enforcement of the rules. We got laws against murder, but those rules will not be enforced if we're the ones that are being hurt. This is not hard to see. This is over 100 years of this. We have plenty of precedent to show us this. So it's race and it's good old boy system.
And I also want to say real quick that the memo that was released, I agree with everything you said. I think the memo that was released was basically trying to give him a baseline or some sort of traction to grab onto when the heat came down. He could say, look, I pointed to a statute. The statute is viable. The statute, in my opinion, was right. I looked at it. I looked at the facts. I didn't do anything wrong here. Of course, I don't agree with that. And with everything QB said, I think that eventually they're going to have to recuse themselves and may even lose their bar license.
So my question, let me go back to QB in regards to Texas. So, you know, most of our listeners are out of Texas. I want you to elaborate with us on if this would have happened in Texas, what is our Texas citizen law? And like I said, the scenario I brought, like the people that were like walking in my house or whatever, it puts me know it is more than just that.
Yeah.
But, you know, I could have been like, oh, well, this is Derrick in his neighborhood and he's walking up in my house, whatever, even though they was looking around. So if I want to take the law into my hands, and be like, oh, I want to shoot you or whatever. You know, I want to say, oh, citizen's arrest. You walking in the neighborhood, you walking up in my house or whatever the case may be. Like, what is Texas citizen's arrest law?
It's very similar to Georgia. The two elements that stick out to me are that the citizen must be observing the ongoing crime or be aware of it or be there, essentially be there, right? And it has to be ongoing. So it can't be something to where a crime was committed and, oh, me and Taria, we're going to go and investigate and go arrest somebody a week later. It must be, so it's a timing thing and it's a presence thing. So that those are the most important elements. So if you or I are observing a theft occurring, we can stop that person. We can hold that person until law enforcement shows up. But if we somehow later become aware that a theft occurred and we're just citizens, we're not law enforcement officers, we can't now later on go and get them. So that's the main distinction. It's very, very similar to Georgia. I have never, in my 13 years of practicing criminal defense law, I have never seen it in applicability ever. I've never heard of it. And in fact, the case that comes to mind is I don't know if you all remember the Joe Horn case, which is similar. Joe Horn, he lived in Pasadena. He observed some individuals who he believed were burglarizing his neighbor's home. He calls 911. He gets on the phone with dispatch, and he tells him, he says, hey, these two guys are burglarizing my neighbor's home. The guys, I believe they were of Latin descent, but they were dark-skinned. They were dark-skinned brothers, but they were, like, Spanish-speaking. The dispatch officer says, okay, we're sending police. Don't do anything. And he says, well, I have my shotgun, because he observed them, and I believe they were leaving with some items from his neighbor's home. You can hear him on the 911 tape warn them, say, hey, I'm going to kill you, and he shoots them, and he kills both of them. The DA presented that case to the grand jury, and the grand jury did not indict. So the case never even went to trial. So we do have the ability to go into action in Texas. I like the part about the Georgia law that says that, about the felony portion, the fact that it should be a felony, I like that. I think that escalates it, that makes it, it gives a citizen more of a reason to spring into action. But, you know, again, it's tenuous, and I don't know many lawyers that have even actually ever seen it in play. But in Texas, we do have it, and it's extremely similar to Georgia law.
So then,
my question is, Andre, you mentioned that you initially need to have handcuffs, like they can handcuff someone. Where in the law does it say that you can use deadly force? Because I guess that's where I'm confused as to citizen's arrest. Where can I go in
Yes.
and pull a gun on someone and say you're arrested? I mean, doesn't that take it above my duties or I guess my ability as just a regular plain citizen? Because if that's the case, anybody can slap a gold star they sell in Dollar Tree and be a police officer and go around making citizens arrest.
Well, here's the gray area where, of course, you know, us lawyers, we live in every day. The slippery slope that you have here is, say if Arbery never gets shot, say if they just pull the gun and say, look, you know, get on the ground, and they call police get up. You know, now you got a situation in Georgia that's aggravated, absent everything else, that's aggravated assault. Once you pull a gun on somebody in Georgia, that's aggravated assault. All right. If you shoot them and they got a dismembered limb, that's aggravated battery. So, you know, and you can get charged with attempted murder too. So to answer your question, there isn't a statute that I am aware of that allows a citizen to openly pull a gun on another citizen to basically make an arrest and not even pull the gun, shoot the citizen and say this was justified because of citizen's arrest. I don't know a statute in Georgia that allows that. It'd be one thing if they had the guns, Aubrey never sees them, he rushes them, he tries to beat them up, you know, and then they felt for their life, whatever, pull out a gun, fine. You can make an argument. I think the argument is weak, but you can make it. But there is no statute that I'm aware of that allows anyone to be shot from a citizen's arrest. Basically, a citizen's arrest should be to the extent, like, it's almost like a shopkeeper's privilege. To the extent that, you know, you need to investigate whether or not somebody committed the felony or not. And of course, if they did, the police are on the way, you know, they can do their job. That's what I think of a citizen's arrest. I've never seen it in play before. I never even heard of it before. I mean, I'm talking about through bar exam, practicing, never heard of it, ever. So to answer your question, there's no statute that I'm aware of that allows you to just blow somebody's head off, you know, for the citizen's arrest. I mean, that's attempted murder, or that's murder or attempted murder if they survive ag battery and aggravated assault all day long.
Like when certain communities have that community watch, don't they operate under those kind of citizens arrest laws when they're like circling and if they see something, they're supposed to call the police and tell them not to move? I thought that because I've actually heard of citizens arrest before, but I thought that that's mostly what the like, you know, community watch people did.
Correct. So a prime example, my grandfather was on the community watch back at home in my neighborhood I grew up in. And if there was a situation that, you know, let's say maybe they saw somebody doing something wrong, they may step out of the car and just go up to them and say, look, you know this wrong, XYZ, you need to stop that. If there's a situation where they saw a burglar or something like that, their first instinct was to make sure everybody was safe, but of course call 911 because they wouldn't walk around with guns, pistols, SKs, or anything like that. And of course they don't have any handcuffs. So the best they could do is, you know, use force to stop whatever felony or whatever crime is being committed. So to answer your question, you know, short term here in Georgia, I've never seen any lookout system of people, of citizens of the neighborhood make an arrest of somebody. What they do is they have cameras everywhere and, you know, they make the phone call and every camera pick up everything else. But I've never seen a lookout system where people are walking around with guns saying, I'm going to arrest you, even though I'm not the police, and you're going to jail. I've never seen it.
I actually have seen recently where one of my classmates that I went to college with, her community, they have, for community watch, like similar to police cars, and they walk around armed. Obviously, they live in a different type of neighborhood. Yes, but yeah, they actually have guns and cars that look like police cars.
Well, you got to understand too, if you're an open carry state, I mean, you could look at Michigan. Right. I mean, let's take Michigan for it. I mean, people are walking up to the Capitol with AKs, SKs, and everything like that. So, you know, absent some, you know, HOA rule that they have in the neighborhood, I don't see a where you're going to get a legal problem with somebody openly carrying a gun patrolling the neighborhood that they've been either hired to do or volunteered to do through the neighborhood. I just don't see how you're going to get to a legal realm where they're going to be in any legal trouble or have any legal ramifications from that.
No one, but I think we're dancing around the real issue, because my problem with it is just self-defense claim.
Yeah.
And how am I, if I'm walking in a neighborhood, walking, jogging, whatever, with cargo pants on and a white t-shirt, do you feel in danger when there's nothing in my hands?
There's no self-defense.
The only way you feel danger is that because I'm a tall black man, that somehow my stature scares you. That's all you have. If he was walking around with an AK-47, if, you know, he has a gang with him, maybe you're offended. But the fact that one's on foot, one's in the back of the truck, like they're hunting something. I'm from the South. I grew up in Bama. So I know exactly what it's like when they're on the back of the truck. That's what you do when you're hunting something. So why is one on the back of the truck hunting and there's a guy in the other car filming? What are y'all really doing? And how is this self-defense? Because it's like out like y'all hunting things. And I know people don't really want to touch on it because, oh, that takes it too far. But when did we start hunting human beings?
Well, go ahead, QB.
That's the definition or the application of white supremacy. Is that get in your truck with your gun, follow someone that you hunt, stop the person, tell that person what you do, and then when that person tries to defend themselves, you kill that person. And for the record, it's the son, McMichael, that shot at Mr. Arbery, but the older McMichael shot at him too from his truck. I mean, this is what I'm saying. So the self defense claim, as Andre stated, it's hard. It will never fly. It will never fly. These men would have had to feel that their life was somehow in danger in order for them to invoke that. That would have to be the objective standard. In other words, that the person that's in that position would have felt like their life is in danger. How do you feel like your life is in danger when you're pursuing? You're in pursuit. They cut this man off. They drove around and they cut him off and they stopped him. They basically had him surrounded. And they ambushed him and then they killed him. So the real point is this. We can talk about all these laws that we think are going to come up, because they are. They're going to attempt to apply Stand Your Ground. They're going to attempt to apply the citizen arrest statute as a means to engage this guy. And they're going to try to use self-defense. But the real issue is what we really need to be talking about, which is the race issue. That's why this is happening. If that was a white 25-year-old young man that did, like Brandy said, went up in a new construction to see how it was made, because the same thing with my home, I did the exact same thing, so I felt her when she was saying that. We came to my house every Sunday, and we walked up in there, and we looked, and sometimes there were people in there. They were in the house because the house is open. They can come in, they can take things, they can take plumbing, they can take lumber, they can take all tools. But you know, that's the norm when you see new construction. So when I saw that this was new construction, I was like, oh, this is fugazi. Like, this is horrible.
Yeah. Like,
new construction. Everybody walks up in new construction in the neighborhood. I mean, it's ridiculous. So we need to really focus on what's really happening here. If this were a young white man, maybe they would have stopped him. Maybe they would have said, hey, I want to talk to you. They lied about there being all of these break-ins in the neighborhood. There was only one, as Dre said, that occurred on January 1st. And that wasn't even a home burglary. That was a burglary of a vehicle. So all of that is a lie and a cover-up. And it almost worked. It almost worked because the McMichaels had friends on the inside. And the only reason why the DA was willing to put her entire career on the line was because that man is white. It's the only reason.
So actually you were going to answer my question because I was going to ask for both of y'all, but Quentin, you kind of went into that because I wanted to kind of play devil's advocate here. So I know a lot of people ask this question because justice is not on our side a lot of times. So my question is, by you being, both of y'all being defense attorneys, I was going to say, what do you think McMichaels would try to use as a defense for this? You know, because the question, you know, they're going to, people are asking the question. People are not having faith in the system. So, you know, I get, you did answer it, but like Andre, being injured, practicing, you were the attorney for the McMichaels. What do you think they're going to try to go, or what defense they're going to try to go for? Because the defense, you know, what do you think the jury may try to, you know, what do you think they might try to bring in front of the jury?
Well, see, here's the gray area in the statute that sets up, I won't say the word perfect, but sets up a situation where the jury could ultimately look at the law and, you know, either acquit them of everything or find them guilty of the lesser included, but not the murder. And what I mean by the gray area is again, they don't have to be right. That has got to be reasonable in what they're doing. We all know as lawyers, the word reasonable has been litigated since God created earth. So what did the McMichaels think at the time that they went and chased him down from the house? I think the if I'm a defense attorney, what I'm arguing is that it's a twofold case. If you believe that it's a citizen's arrest, then you got to believe that from when he left the house all the way to when they were going to chase him, that he was still in the commission of a felony. Because at that point, they could have believed that he had stolen equipment, he had stolen whatever he had stolen. And then when they got to him, you know, of course, that's the second part of this. The second part of this is, okay, if you don't believe this is a citizen's arrest, fine, take that away. But you have to believe that we were justified in what we were doing based on we haven't heard from the McMichaels insofar to say is, conversation of what happened between the two, because the video then doesn't have any audio. But you got to believe, if you don't believe the citizen's arrest, you got to believe that him charging at us, we would have never shot him. And because when he charged at us, and the only thing we were trying to do is make the citizen's arrest, when he charged at us, it was kind of like a civil contributory negligence. Like, he contributed to his own murder. Kind of like, it wasn't me that shot him. I did not pull the trigger. It wasn't a murder. It wasn't a malice. I didn't have any malice in my mind to shoot. I wasn't in the commission of an aggravated assault because I never was using a gun to assault him. It was him that came on to me saying what he's going to do. He rushed, whatever like that. Gun went off. But it's hard for me to even say this, Brandy, as a defense attorney, because, you know, it's all weak. Any argument I bring up is weak. All of them. The self-defense argument is weak. The citizen's arrest argument is weak. I felt for safety of my life is weak. For the safety of my life is weak. The burglaries that had led up to that is weak. Everything in this case is weak. But, you know, I'm not trying to get away from what you asked me. Well, QB said a big thing. If he was white, if Aubrey was a white kid, let's say if the McMichaels were black and Aubrey was a white kid, there's no way in the world 2.5 months goes by and they're not in jail. They may have been in jail. They may have been out one day, if that. But they would.
I don't think we're all lawyers here. We cannot operate in speculation, guys. We can't.
Well, it's not speculation, but it's the truth.
It is speculation because you're talking about if you were to ask, if someone was to ask your client that on the stand and you don't object as to your honor, objection, speculation. I mean, come on.
You're not living in the real world right now. You're living in a fictitious world. The real world, especially here in Georgia, in the South. Right here in the state of Georgia, is that if that was a black man or a white kid, and those two were black, there's no way in the world almost 70 some days go by and they're sitting at home just chilling. I'm just telling you reality. This ain't speculation. This is real. This is here in Georgia.
Well, when you're talking about a legal standpoint, now whether my personal opinion, I believe that, but from a legal expertise. We can't operate in speculation on that because
I already gave you my legal expertise. I got past that already. This is telling you what the truth of the matter is. I already gave you my legal expertise. I told you that the self-defense argument is going to be weak and how they're going to try to argue it. I told you that the citizen's arrest argument is weak and how they're going to try to argue it. I already told you that there was only one burglary call before that and they can't use this string of burglaries and they did that. Now, those are the facts. But what I'm telling you is what's reality is that the McMichaels who sat in their house from February all the way to May, if they were black, they would not have done that. That is the reality of the South in Georgia. And I understand what you're saying about speculation, but that's beyond legal opinion. That's something that we spoke about earlier in this podcast, that we got laws, but they're only enforced a lot of times in certain ways. And of course, we saw it here with the McMichaels, they had it inside. Good old boy system. They knew the people. They almost got away with a pure murder. I mean, think about that. They almost got away with a murder or a lynching. Not even a murder. Let's call it what it is. This is a modern day lynching. And they almost got away with it, but for the defense attorney. Thought he was doing a good job, but actually gave out evidence that looks like it's gonna hurt the McMichaels.
Okay, I have another question for you as a defense attorney for both you and Quinn.
Yes, ma'am.
Before
you ask your question, can I just say one thing? I believe that it is time for Black professionals to stop being silent and call it what it is. And we can hide behind the laws and we can hide behind objections, we can hide behind speculations, but I've had too many of my friends who do not look like us ask, what should we be doing? And it's not to go run 2.23 miles. That's not what it's about. It's not about a hashtag. It's about calling it what it is. And until we, the professionals, stand up and call it what it is and say what it is, nothing's gonna change. We're gonna be back here again in another week talking about something else. We'll have another podcast. We'll have another three or four of them. And maybe it'll be your nephew or your cousin or my people. So until we start saying stuff, and call it what it is and stop hiding about behind the laws that write our checks, no difference is going to be made, period.
Okay,
I'm sorry,
so
I'm just a little passionate.
I understand. I think we all have our passion in our own positions in this particular matter. Okay, so from a prosecutorial standpoint, what is on the table for them if they were to cop that plea? Because you said they're in a small town. You said that the prosecutors probably are on their side. So why even go to trial? I could get probation.
Well, I'll throw out we don't have degrees of murder here in Georgia. We have malice murder, we have felony murder, and then we have manslaughter, involuntary. Of course, you have vehicular manslaughter predicated on DUI, not predicated on DUI. Manslaughter here is 20 years. So let's look at the parameters. We have two white, and they did a press conference earlier today, right before the podcast. You have two white lawyers out of Macon who's representing McMichaels. You have a county where it's mainly white, where they know just about everybody there. Of course, good old boy system. You have a African American lady from Cobb County who ran as a Republican in Cobb County to get the district attorney seat over there because as a Democrat in that county she would have never won. You got her standing face for the prosecution. All right, so you got her standing face for the prosecution. She's got to basically incorporate and basically make a jury of all white, which is what it's probably going to be, understand that she's not just there to represent that a black victim is dead. She's representing the people of Glenn County to see that justice is being served in a modern day lynching. So if I'm looking at it from a prosecutorial aspect of all this, you know, I can't do a change of venue as a prosecutor. Of course, they could try, but it's not going to work. Only defense attorneys can do that. And of course, number two, I think the biggest issue here is that emotions. We all know that a lot of district attorney's office run off emotions because you have a family who's calling, emailing, coming up there saying, I want this person dead. I want these people dead. I want these people dead. Going to your point, if they get a plea of manslaughter, you got to take it. I mean, as a defense attorney, if she's going to offer manslaughter based on whatever evidence that's mitigating in the plea negotiations, you got to take it. But if they truly believe they didn't kill the boy illegally, then this is going to be one of the biggest trials in America's history.
There's no doubt about it. If he does take the manslaughter plea,
okay.
If they do, what are they then open up to as far as sentencing? And okay, does Georgia do like Texas and kind of separate the two? Is that you have your
complicated trial, like sentencing one, or you know, do a trial and then do a sentence?
So in Georgia, a lot of times you get sentenced the same day. You go to trial the day you get found guilty at trial, they'll sentence you the same day. The only cases that don't get that kind of treatment are death penalty cases. Death penalty cases don't get that kind of treatment because, of course, as you all may know, you know, the jury has to vote here in Georgia whether or not, you know, this person's going to die or not. So that's the only case that the same day is not going to happen. But if you go to trial, let's say if they go to trial and get found guilty of the lesser included, which is manslaughter and not murder. The judge is going to sentence them the same day, unless there are some circumstances that the defense attorneys bring up to say, Judge, we need another day in order to bring mitigating witnesses in order for you to consider giving them a lower standard. There's no mandatory minimum on manslaughter here in Georgia. There isn't.
I'm sorry. I didn't mean to cut you off. QB, now, we know in Texas, ours is different. You know, you have your trial day one or whatever, and then the next day or the same day you can go into, you have a sentencing trial. I mean, you have a sentencing hearing. You got to present all your evidence and things like that. But briefly, because we're running out of time, can you break that down as to if this was in Texas and we were under Texas laws and they were, me and Michael were clean, you know, how would that look? And then, or if they didn't clean, let's go to trial, how would they look?
So, talking from a defense attorney perspective, if the circumstances were exactly the same, I'm going to be honest with you. I would seek probation in a case like this. Why? Because you have some things that work to your benefit. I assume that because he's former law enforcement, that he doesn't have any prior felony convictions. I'm assuming that his son doesn't have any prior felony convictions. So they are probation eligible in Texas. They can get probation. You look at like a case like the Amber Geiger case, where she murdered both Jean and his living room. She was 10 years. So you know, even under the greatest of circumstances, you can still get a pretty favorable situation if you go to trial. So my attempt would be to try to assert for the defense, because you don't just go in asking for a plea. You got to have some kind of defense, right? Whatever, you know, that defense is, the self-defense, the citizen, invoking the citizen's arrest, I'm going to try to make that work, or at least put in the mind of the prosecutor that that's what we're going to do and that we have a chance to win. And if they don't think, if they don't agree with me, or we do come to an agreement that they have issues in their case, that, hey, give me the maximum probation, which in Texas is 10 years. But yes, we do have a bifurcated system in Texas, whereas you go to trial on guilt, innocence, and then you also go to trial on punishment. Those two things can happen in the same day, but usually in a murder case, they won't. You can have a jury for guilt, innocence. You can have just a bench trial for punishment. You can have it vice versa. So it's interesting how it will play out. I think from a prosecutor's standpoint, in this case, when I saw who was appointed as the prosecutor, I was like, oh boy, the fix is in. They got a black woman to try this case in a mostly white county. These are white citizens of that county. Dre, correct me if I'm wrong. She's not from that county. And so now she's an outsider trying to come in and convict two white men, one of which is longtime law enforcement. I believe he has 30 plus years of law enforcement, plus his work with the DA's office. She's now an outsider. She's black. She's a woman trying to convict two white men in their own county. That's going to be a tough situation for her if they go to trial. When Dre said, mentioned acquittal, I think it's possible. I think it's absolutely possible. And guess what? If he's acquitted, if both of those two gentlemen acquitted, there's no appeal. There's no way the state could come back and challenge it and do it again because of the double jeopardy rule. So it's real interesting to look at this and to see the dynamics of how this thing is playing out. Personally, I would ask for probation. I would ask for pretrial diversion. Flat out, I'd be like, man.
Explain what pretrial diversion is real quick. You're using big words.
Right.
Pretrial
diversion is basically a contract with the state that you're going to stay out of trouble for a period of time, and then your case is dismissed. And you can even actually have your case expunged after the completion of the diversion and the case being dismissed. I think that there's a very good chance that they may get probation or some sort of pretrial diversion in this case because of the circumstances.
Well, we're going to wrap up. Thank you guys immensely for being on our show. This was a great conversation. I know we've been talking about this for hours and hours on end. We may do a part. So the part of this show is, Quentin, you know about this segment. We have what is called Rest Our Cases. So Dre, what we call Rest Our Cases, this is something where in a second where you want to like lay to rest anything regarding issue or anything in the world, whatever that's going on, that die. So it's like, you know what? Y'all done use the word lit a lot. I don't want to hear you know, what's the case. So I'm going to start with Taria and let her do her rest.
You want me to go first? I was going to end this thing. I was going to end it, but I'll begin it. My rest of my case is I'm ready for Black people, particularly Black professionals, to stop lying to themselves about what's really going on in this country. Stop hiding behind excuses. We are being killed left and right and no one's doing anything about it. And we're telling our people to go vote when voting is not helping them at all. So instead of having your friends that don't look like you run a 2.23 mile and then sending a hashtag that says, hashtag I run with Maude, tell them what it really is going on and have an honest conversation with them to explain why you are so passionate about this, why you didn't get out and run a 2.23 mile while you're trying to figure out how can change really happen. That's what we should be doing. So if you're a Black professional and you have friends that don't look like you, they're wondering what can they do. Answer the real questions. Stop hiding behind. Go vote. Thank you.
Sam.
Okay, guys, mine is going to be a little bit off topic. Taria, I don't think that they're worrying about what can they do, first off, but that's not my, that's not my rest my case. Okay, so this has nothing to do with this particular situation, but I saw recently this post that Lil Boosie did in regards to paying for a full grown woman to perform oral sex on his 12 and 13 year old son. And he believes that this is what Black fathers do, or fathers do, not just Black fathers, as a rite of passage to manhood. That is statutory rape. If you do know someone who is doing that, you need to go to prison. And I think that we as a community made a mistake by backing Free Bootsy movement, because Bootsy clearly should be in prison.
Quentin,
I'm
gonna go to you.
So
rest your case.
Yeah, let me get back to because that one I had to think about that. listen, man, my thing is this, and I know we got a short on time, but I think that Black people need to put the rest finally. This idea that we can integrate ourselves into change, that we can come and somehow accomplish some things. And as a result of our accomplishments, our education, our jobs, that we're now treated the same as our counterparts. That has never happened in the history of the world. Neely Fuller talks about, you know, how you get rid of the system. of injustice. The only way that you can get rid of the system of injustice is if you replace it with a system of justice. Begging, marching, crying, pleading, running, that's not going to change this thing. We have to literally destroy the current system and implement a system that is fair for everyone, regardless of their color, regardless of their economic position in life. That's the only way that these things are going to get better. History has shown us that.
So I want to know your views on how to get to that point. We don't have time, so we're probably going to bring you on for another episode so you can discuss that, because I want to know how to get to that point. If you're saying destroy and start all over, I want to know that, but we don't have time. Andre, what's the rest? You have a rest? I know you're new to the show. So.
I do. Mine is, you know, Black people in general should not sell their soul to a check. Too many times. I think one of the other ladies said this earlier, but too many times we hold back and don't say what things really are because of a paycheck or because of we're getting paid or because of what clientele it might bother or who it might offend or what relationships it might or what bridges it might burn or what relationships it might offend. But, you know, too many times we create relationships in the legal field, especially with prosecutors, with other people, this and the third. And when certain issues come up, we see those people are very silent. Of course, we want to be outspoken about them. And we don't do that because we think that it might affect, you know, our relationship with them or our pockets or anything like that. I think Quentin can tell you that anytime an issue comes up, I always speak out about it. Either gonna like me or you're not. You're either gonna hire me or you're not. You know, me speaking out about issues is not gonna stop me from going out and doing my job. So I think that, you know, my rest of my case is that, you know, stop looking at your pocket and saying, oh, I can't say this because, you know, it might hurt me, or I can't say that because it might hurt me. No, say what it is, mean what you say, stand by it, and whatever happens, happens. And that's it.
Well, thank y'all so much for being a guest on our show. Thank you for coming back, Quentin. Thank you, Andre, for coming. This is a very great topic, as always. We can go on and on about this. I hope we don't have another one about this in some weeks or months, but let's keep it real. It's going to happen again. Because, matter of fact, Quentin, I remember around Christmas time, Sam and I weren't able to be on the show, but we did a show about similar to this. About driving while Black. So, but thank you again. Let everybody know where they can follow you, Andre, where they can follow you on social media. If they want to hire you, if they in Georgia, if they want to, you know, ask you to in Texas, and I've got to refer some people to you. So, you know, let everybody know. Oh, do you think it's in Dallas?
I didn't hear you, Brandy. What'd you say?
You practice in Dallas? Because, you know, I got some people I know.
Yeah, I have a couple of pending cases right now in Dallas and Collin County. So, okay.
Well, let everybody know where they can follow you, where they can reach you.
Absolutely. Thank you, Ms. Brandy. My Twitter is and Instagram is at QB Law, at QB Law. My website is qb-law.com. And again, I practice in Texas, mostly in Houston, but all over. And I'll take your phone call for free as long as you don't keep me on the phone too long.
Andre, if we have some, bring them Georgia people to our podcast. So, you know, we got Georgia.
Have lots of line sisters in Georgia. Yeah. I have lots of people in Atlanta, rather.
So we got a lot of people that listen. So tell them where, you know, they need a criminal defense tort attorney out there in Hotlanta.
Well, first, I got a bevy of people that wouldn't mind coming on the podcast and sharing their thoughts and views about, you know, current issues or past issues. But to contact me, my website is www.ajsmithlawfirm.com. My business cell phone number, you can reach me, yes, at my business cell, 770-615-8853. My Instagram is Attorney Andre J. Smith. My Facebook is the same. And my motto is hire me and I'll fight for you.
All right. Well, as always, you can follow the podcast. You can follow me at @brand_Janae. My page is still private, people, because y'all like to create them fake pages out there.
I have one last question. I just have one last question, if we have time, for the defense attorney. It's just a yes or no question. If the defendants in this particular matter were to want to hire one of you, thinking that a Black attorney would help their case, would you take their case?
Hell no.
Okay.
It depends on how much money they get. and Dre, Dre is my family. But he should have known my answer on this. It depends on how much money they're gonna pay. Now, I would not have represented Dylan Roof. I would not have. He's about the only person that I said I would not represent for any amount of money in the world. But if Michael's, whatever the name is, give me a couple hundred thousand dollars, I would definitely represent them. And I would probably.
Well, I was
gonna say it's gonna take 10 million for me.
The
100,000 for probation. That ain't bad, Quentin. You won.
Right.
I need 10 million.
Sam, are they following you today?
No, don't follow me, but follow our podcast.
Am Taria T. Hutch.
Yes, you can follow me. Yes, all my pages are public. Well, not the Facebook, because people are crazy on Facebook, but on Instagram you can follow me on Simply Being T.
We still finding her man. You know, we ain't getting it.
Yes, please call in. Call in, send your resumes. Your income. Yes.
No.
And just because what this podcast was about, we do not discriminate when it comes to the dating game. Okay. If you are an advocate or an ally, we're okay with that too.
So yeah, so follow us at No Further Questions on Facebook, book No Further Q on Instagram. Coupon on Twitter. And you know, hey, single man, hit us up in the DMs, because we still on the search for Taria finding a man.
Taller.
And Brandy. And Brandy. Brandy single.
I'm living my best single life. I'm living my best single life.
I'm living mine too. I'm just looking at the same time.
No, but it's going to be fun finding one. But as always, thank y'all for listening, joining in. We will catch y'all next time. Thank y'all guys for being on the show. Like, it was a pleasure.
Always a pleasure.
No problem. Thank y'all. Be safe. Cover your face.
Thank you. Through to the cubes.